taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were every day American.
Hello there, everyday Americans. Welcome back to the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. As always, I'm glad you could join me. If you want to find out more, head over to the website, constitutionstudy.com. That's where you can find everything we're doing here to help everyday Americans return the Constitution to we, the people, its rightful owners. And a good example of why this is important actually happened late last week, last Thursday. We had some executive order signed. You know, there's a common saying, it's common among politics. It says the ends justify the means. I prefer to call it by its better known name, by hook or by crook. And boy, was there a lot crooked going on in those executive orders. So let's take some time and look at some of them and see what we can learn. Before we go there, though, there's one point, and I've been holding on to this for a little while because I was waiting for the perfect time to bring it out. But I saw an article, this actually came out of Bearing Arms, but it reported that the mayors of Louisville, Chicago, Los Angeles, and Baltimore were all calling on the Biden administration to enact, quote unquote, gun control via executive order. Now, Mayor Greg Fisher, Lori Lightfoot, Eric Garcetti, and Brandon Scott all encouraged the president to break the law. Well, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, Article 6, Clause 2. So if you violate the Constitution, you break the law. And the Constitution clearly says the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. But since these mayors, even though all of these cities, they are both the city and the states have extremely restrictive gun control measures, quote unquote, gun control measures. They aren't, by the way, gun control, they're people control. But even though they have these very strict attempts to control the violence through firearms, that's what they're claiming. And even though they've been shown to be utter failures, and these cities have extremely high murder rates, higher than cities and states that don't have these laws, now they went and they asked the president to do what the legislature has not yet been able to do, to go beyond the law, beyond the Constitution, beyond the legislature, and simply effectively create law with his pen. That would make Mr. Biden not a president. That would make him a king. That's what these mayors are asking the president to do, to act like a king. I mean, might as well give him a crown. And oh, by the way, if you live in these cities, if you live in Louisville, Chicago, Los Angeles, or Baltimore, you and your neighbors hired these people to tell to ask President Biden to get what they want by hook or by crook. Forget the law, forget the rules, just do it. Now, they have they put out all lofty goals. They want to reduce the harm of the pandemic. I have no idea what gun control has to do with the pandemic. They want to reduce gun violence, even though every time they've increased the gun restrictions, they end up with more gun violence. It just doesn't seem to work. Now they're going to beg the federal government to do what they've been utter failures at doing. Even though they've gotten what they wanted in their cities, for the most part, they're going to beg the federal government to do more. These are tyrants. They're petty tyrants, and you hired them, which means the people of Louisville, Chicago, Los Angeles, and Baltimore, you all authorized your employee to make this claim. They are doing it in your name and by your authority. I hope you are proud of yourself. Now, I know a lot of people who don't like guns and who don't think other people should have guns, but rather than following the law and saying, well, if we don't want the average citizen to have guns, we need to modify the Constitution, we need to amend it. No, we're not going to bother with that. We're not even going to bother waiting for the legislature to violate the law. we're going to beg the administration, the executive branch, to not only violate the Second Amendment, but to effectively violate Article 1 of the Constitution, which gives sole legislative power to the Congress. So if we're looking for crooks, we don't need to look to Washington. And if you live in Louisville, Chicago, Los Angeles, or Baltimore, and you think this is a bad idea, my question is, what are you doing to fire these bums? I'm sorry, I have very little confidence for people who have sworn or affirmed an oath to support the Constitution and then seem to do everything they can to violate it. They're bums, and they are there because of the people of these cities. And I want to know what the people of these cities are going to do to make sure they lose their job. Because otherwise, the people of these cities are saying, yeah, this is what we want. We don't care about laws anymore. We don't care about self-government. We don't care about the Constitution. We want something, and we're going to get it by hook or by crook. Now, I'm not sure how much persuasion it took to get President Biden to sign these orders. I know House Democrats had part to do with this. They've been pushing for him to take executive action on concealable assault-style firearms. Now, I have no idea how you define an assault-style firearm. It's not part of the National Firearms Act. It's not defined in any law. The closest you've got is the military defines an assault rifle as a fully automatic weapon of small enough size to be easily carried by the average soldier. That's an assault rifle. But now they're talking about concealable assault style weapons, basically scary guns. They don't want the people to have scary guns. So since they could not, or at least they're having problems getting it through Congress because, oh, I know those pesky Republicans do occasionally support things that are constitutional. And so they couldn't get it through by hook. They couldn't get it through by following the process, even though it would still be illegal because it's still unconstitutional. No, they're going to ask President Biden to do it. And guess what? President Biden did it. He signed this executive order, or actually several executive orders. And I want to take a look at some of the things that, according to some of the reports, I haven't actually seen the language of the order, but it was, you know, in his press conference, there was some reporting about it. So let's take a look at some of the crook that President Biden dropped on the American people the other day. So the first one is that he orders the Justice Department within 30 days to issue a proposed rule to help stop the proliferation of ghost guns. First of all, the Department of Justice, which is part of the executive branch, therefore he can give them orders, but he can't order them to violate the Constitution. He can't order them to violate the law. He can only order them to do things within the scope of the executive powers. And he wants them to come up with a rule to stop what he calls the proliferation of ghost guns. All right. What is a quote-unquote ghost gun? Basically, to the anti-gun fascists, to the tyrants that don't want the people to be able to defend themselves, a ghost gun is any gun that you can assemble yourself and you know, doesn't have a serial number. In other words, there's no way for it to be tracked by government. Now think about that for a second. I know some people are going, oh no, guns that are not tracked by government, how scary. Do you realize how many guns are not tracked by government? First of all, does the government have the right to track guns that you own? Do they have the authority to track any of your property? Legally, no. Basically, what we're talking about is they're usually referred to as partial receivers or 80% receivers. And the idea is for a hobbyist, they can purchase the parts to assemble their own gun. Now, according to the National Firearms Act, there's a definition for the part of a firearm that's actually considered the firearm. You know, it's the receiver of a semi-automatic rifle. It's the frame of a pistol. And those have to have serial numbers. Well, if someone sends you a block of metal that is not currently a receiver, it doesn't have a serial number on it. Now, again, everybody gets up in arms because, oh, my God, this can't be tracked by government. Law enforcement would have no way of tracking this. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's what the Second Amendment says. Yes, it says a well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of a free state, but it also says that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, and that includes being tracked. If I told you that your internet account had to have a permanent address so the government could track you, you'd think that was a violation of your First Amendment. And it, well, if it's the federal government, it would be if Congress passed that law. If you had to, if any time you spoke or you published material, it had to be trackable, well, then that would be an infringement on your rights, wouldn't it? Yet somehow we are so afraid, we have been trained to be afraid of firearms, that the idea, to some people, the idea that a firearm cannot be tracked by government is terrifying. The term for that is hoplophobia. I believe that's the right term, hoplophobia, which is the irrational fear of firearms. That's what this is. This is an irrational fear of firearms, and the federal government has zero, absolutely zero authority to determine what guns must or must not be registered. They can't register them. They have no legal authority to do that. They have no legal authority to infringe on this, and since they could not, or at least they've had trouble getting it through Congress, we're going to bypass the entire, this checks and balances, these three branches of government. We're just going to wipe all that away, and we're going to have a king that's going to issue an order and forget the rules. So that's the first one. Next, he said, the Justice Department will, within 60 days, will issue a proposed rule to make clear when a device marketed as a stabilizing brace effectively turns a pistol into a short-barreled rifle subject to the requirements of the National Firearm Act. Well, all right, stop for just a second. The National Firearms Act, which, by the way, is unconstitutional, therefore it's illegal, but he's referring to the National Firearms Act. The National Firearms Act has a definition written by Congress for a short-barreled rifle. That's a rifle, and I think it has to have a 16-inch barrel, and it has to be, if it's shorter than a 16-inch barrel, and if the overall length is, I forget what the minimum is, it's considered a short-barreled rifle. But we're not talking about rifles. We're talking about handguns. We're not talking about something that you place to your shoulder. You know, that's a rifle, right? It's a long gun. It's generally shot by placing the butt against your shoulder, sighting across the top of it, and then shooting. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about a brace so that when you hold your firearm single-handedly, it's more stable. If you haven't taken a class on handgun safety and shooting a handgun, by the way, if you haven't, whether you want to get into guns or not, I would certainly recommend it for no other purpose than so that you understand what people are talking about when they're talking about firearms. The most common stances, the most common grips for a firearm is a two-handed grip, where the pistol rests in the palm of one hand, the other hand wraps around it, and it gives you a stable platform so you can shoot accurately. Now, you can also shoot the gun single-handed, where you're just holding your arm out, and of course, there's more movement in the wrist. So if you get a brace that minimizes the movement of your wrist, it can save your wrist, right? Because when you fire a handgun, there's a recoil, and that is being absorbed by your wrist and your elbow and your shoulder if you're holding it properly. A brace means you're supporting your wrist so that it doesn't kick and deflect your wrist, so you can injure yourself. And I suppose from that standpoint could also make it more accurate. Apparently that scares people. The idea to be able to accurately shoot a firearm scares people. Again, hoplophobia. So now, even though the National Firearms Act definition says, no, this is not a short-barreled rifle because it is a pistol with a brace on it, and even though BATFE originally said, nope, this doesn't meet the requirements of a short-barreled rifle under National Firearms Act, now we're just going to ignore that. And by the way, this started with Trump. All right, so before we go piling on Biden, Trump started this when he basically told the BATFE, I believe, to see if they could reclassify them as being falling under the National Firearms Act. By the way, for anyone who doesn't know, National Firearms Act signed in 23, but I'm not sure, does not prohibit the ownership of these weapons. It merely says they're taxed. So everything, when they talk about something being classified as a National Firearms Act, all that means is the federal government wants a $200 tax stamp to own it. That's it, right? The National Firearms Act doesn't ban them, doesn't outlaw them. It just says you have to pay a tax in order to own them. Oh, no, but we're not infringing on the right to keep and bear arms. See, President Biden said, we're not infringing on the Second Amendment, but we're going to make you pay a tax to own this firearm. By the way, there's a lot more ignorant stuff that President Biden said, but maybe I'll get to that later, maybe I won't. We'll see how the day goes. This is number three. All right, number three, the Justice Department within 60 days will publish model red flag legislation for states. Red flag laws are an affront to any concept of due process and liberty in this country. We're not talking about, this basically throws due process out the window. Red flag laws, and I've written about them on the website, constitutionstudy.com. Just search for red flag and you'll find, I've written about it several times. Red flag laws are this idea that if somebody is worried, somebody thinks you might be a danger, then they can contact the police and the police can go to a judge and without any proof, without any probable cause, without any support by oath or affirmation, they can issue a warrant to confiscate your firearms. And then you have to beg, you have to go through this process to return your property. So we have illegal warrants because Fourth Amendment says it has to be based on probable cause. It has to be supported by oath or affirmation, meaning someone has to stand in court and swear or affirm that this is true. And then they're going to deprive you of your property but not following due process. Trust me, if they can come and confiscate your guns just because someone said so, what makes you think they're not going to come and confiscate anything they want? You know, it's guns today. Who knows what it's going to be tomorrow? And we've never seen a situation where someone would abuse such power. We've never seen, say, a divorce where one person might make accusations of the other person because they're mad, because they're looking to take advantage. You know, if this person, if you go to court and said, well, this person has had a restraining order, emergency restraining order, you know, they can't be trusted. Now, don't get me wrong. There are definitely times where you know somebody that's a danger or that you think might be a danger. And if you know somebody, I mean, I've had situations where someone has approached me and said, I'm concerned based on the state of mind of this person. Would you hold on to their firearms until we get this worked out? And that is to me, that was a responsible thing to do because we had a situation where someone was agitated and we just wanted to take that off the table to keep somebody, so that someone felt safer. And there are situations where people are physically in danger from an ex-spouse, an ex-boyfriend in the middle of a divorce. But do you really think that if someone is threatened by an ex-spouse or someone in a divorce or an ex-boyfriend or girlfriend, that ex is not going to use a red flag law to make sure that person can't defend themselves? Just imagine the situation where, and again, it happens more often to women than to men. There's a messy divorce going on. There's a fight over child custody. The wife is concerned. The husband's getting agitated. She has serious concerns that he's threatened her. Today, in many states, she can't get a firearm to protect herself. But let's assume she's able to get a firearm, either because she previously had it or she lives in a state that isn't quite so ridiculous. She gets a firearm to protect herself. And then the spouse, the threatening spouse, goes to the police and said, "I'm worried. She just got a gun. I think she's going to hurt the children. Do you have any proof?" "I don't need any proof. It's a red flag law. We need an emergency protection order because she just purchased a gun and I'm afraid she's going to use it to harm the children." All she was doing was trying to protect herself from an enraged spouse. And now, without any proof, without any due process, she's going to be defenseless before this enraged spouse. So yeah, it violates the Second Amendment, it violates the Fourth Amendment, it violates the Fifth Amendment. And what they're trying to do is get the states to do this, which violates the 14th Amendment, because the states are prohibited as well by both the Fifth and the 14th Amendment. So we're just going to throw the entire Constitution out the window because we want people to not have guns. And then this one I loved. It says the administration is investing. By the way, the administration doesn't invest. The administration takes money from you to spend on someone else. So they're going to take your money and they're going to spend it on, quote unquote, evidence-based community violence intervention. Well, I would recommend they do a little bit of research. In fact, if they looked at the CDC and if they looked at the maybe the Crime Prevention Research Institute, if they looked at them, they'd find out, you know what the best way to reduce violence in most communities? Allow people to defend themselves. Don't leave them helpless and defenseless in front of an armed felon, which is what most of these EOs, executive orders, do. So we're talking about throwing away the Constitution, ignoring the rule of law, ignoring even the pretense of being self-governed. We're just going to ignore all that, throw it all out the window, because certain groups that have influence with certain political parties want people to be disarmed. They don't want people to defend themselves. Now, if it was about keeping people safe, I'd say they're misguided, but at least, okay, you've got a good cause, but I can prove that it's not. Do you know why? Again, the cities that have the strictest restrictions on the owning and carrying of firearms are the ones that have the highest gun violence rate. And even if we look at, the data, I think the answer, the number is roughly, I think it's on average one, depending on who you go, there's several different studies. I believe the number is like 100 times a gun is used to stop a crime for every one time it is used to commit a crime. Let me do that again. And I'd have to go back and find the research. Crime Prevention Research Center has a lot of good information on this, but there have been several studies, and on average, somewhere between 100 and a much larger number, I think 1,500, for every time a gun is used to commit a crime, between 100 and 1,500 times, a gun is used to stop a crime. So if they want to look at the science, look at the evidence, and say maybe the best thing to do to stop crime is to allow people to defend themselves, rather than making them sit and wait and pray that government will do it for them. Then the last item, well, there was actually two items. One item was simply appointing a or nominating a director of BATFE, but the Justice Department will issue an annual report on firearms trafficking. Well, okay, if you're talking about international firearms trafficking, fine. If you're talking about domestic firearms trafficking, first of all, how are you defining trafficking? Second of all, it's none of the federal government's business. And basically what the federal government's trying to do is they're trying to make criminals out of people who own and carry firearms. I'm going to talk a bit more about this next week. I have an episode scheduled on the Battle of Lexington, which I hope you'll listen to, because it really is a good episode on how we got to the beginning of the Revolutionary War and how we're mimicking that today. So before we head off to break, I want to remind you that America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio Network. You can also listen on our media player and from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best in-class apps that are available on Apple, Android, and Alexa. You can listen to us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And now you can listen to the podcast of these programs through those very same apps. So check out AmericaOutLoud.com and check out the apps on the different app stores. And we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses, as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together, and we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
Well, there was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutLoud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. That's right, we're here at the Constitution Study, and we're reading and studying the Constitution to teach the rising generation to be free. We're talking about how we're just going to ignore the rule of law, we'll ignore the Constitution. And we get things like what's been going on in Washington the last several days. So let's take a look here. Before Biden issued his executive orders, he called for a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. Now, there's a couple things you need to notice. This happened after a shooting in Colorado. The first thing we need to notice is, have you ever noticed how before the bodies stopped falling, before we even know what happened, there are people that are already saying, we got to get rid of the guns. We got to get rid of the guns. We got to get rid of the guns. Right? Again, hoplophobia. It's this irrational fear that the guns are the cause of all the problem. It's never the meat behind the gun. It's never the person with the evil intent. It's always, it's the gun. As if the gun somehow, without that gun, this wouldn't have happened. And one of the ways they do it is they like to pick on, quote unquote, assault weapons and quote unquote, high capacity magazines. Now, just so you know, I've been around guns my entire life. There were guns in the house when I was growing up. And you know what? Not only did I never shoot anyone, I've never seen a gun go off all by itself. Never seen it happen. But people are worried about assault weapons. And I remember back when I lived in New York, and New York was pushing for an assault weapons ban. There was a member of the state assembly who was pushing for this, and I made him an offer. I said, listen, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, well, I didn't quite put it that way. But I said, your definition of assault rifle makes no sense. And if you will give me a half hour of your time and come to the gun range, I will prove you don't know what you're talking about. Surprise, surprise, he never showed up. I said, fine. I said, bring as many people as you want. Bring as much security as you want. I'm fine with that. I just want you to come and I want to show you something. Because at the time, I had two 22 caliber long rifle, 22 long rifle caliber rifles. In other words, the actions were exactly the same. One had a simple plastic stock on it, and most people would simply call it a squirrel gun. The other also had a plastic stock on it, but it looked more like an AR-15. And according to this assemblyman, even though both guns fired the same cartridges at the same rate, had the same barrel length and the same accuracy, one was an assault rifle, the other wasn't. Why? Because it was scary looking. Right? This isn't hoplophobia. This is just plain ignorance. An assault weapon, first of all, there is no legal definition of an assault weapon. There's various definitions in different districts, and there's no overall definition of an assault weapon. The military does have the definition of an assault rifle. I mentioned that before. An assault rifle is a fully automatic handheld weapon. We're not talking about that. They are possible to get. You can purchase them. They are extremely expensive. And in order to hold them currently legally, you have to pay your tax stamp, which means there are very, very, very few assault rifles in civilian hands. Issue number one. So an AR-15 is not an assault weapon. But it's not fully automatic. I don't care what you saw on TV, right? The TV and the movies make you think that everybody's running around with these fully automatic weapons. It doesn't happen. It's an AR-15 is a overgrown 22 caliber. It's like an overgrown squirrel gun that shoots one round every time you pull the trigger. It's a semi-automatic weapon. Now, technically, for it to be an assault weapon, I'd have to use it to assault someone. You see, assault is not an adjective. It doesn't modify a noun. It is a verb. It is an action. You know, technically, you know, if I pick up a chair and I hit you with it, that's an assault chair. The same way a weapon is not an assault weapon until it's actually used to assault someone. But again, we are dealing with fear. If you make it sound scary, you make it sound dangerous, you show people on TV that These AR-15s everyone's talking about are these fully automatic weapons and people hosing places down. They're lying to you to scare you. The same with high-capacity magazines. There is more than ample evidence that the number of rounds in a magazine does not change the rate of fire significantly over any period of time. Anybody with just a little bit of practice can change a magazine in 1 or 2 seconds. Besides, in these shootings where everyone's worried about the high-capacity magazine, the person is not shooting at a high rate of fire. They're not going, you know, not hosing the place down like you see in the movies. They're shooting a couple times and moving and shooting a couple times and moving. And when their magazine is empty, they swap the magazine and away they go. These do absolutely nothing. But again, we want to scare people. We've got people terrified. And it's funny, I was talking to a person I used to work with. This was quite a while ago. And even though this person he owns firearms, he carries handguns, he somehow thinks that an AR-15 is this magic super weapon that's going to kill everybody. It's become an irrational fear of something because we call it assault. Even though, you know, you talk about the 94 assault weapons ban, the characteristics that made a weapon an assault weapon, a quote-unquote assault weapon, did nothing to improve its accuracy, did nothing to improve its rate of fire. All it did was, you know, oh, you have a detachable magazine, and if you had a foregrip, if instead of holding your hand horizontally to hold it, you could hold it vertically because it's more comfortable, that made it more dangerous. It's ridiculous. It's stupid, but it's what happens when we stop paying attention to facts and we let fear and emotion and people who have no clue what they're talking about, people who lie. Now, whether they're lying because they've been misinformed or they are actively lying, these people are lying about these things. And even with all that, the Constitution says, the supreme law that says, the right to keep and bear arms. It doesn't even say firearms. It says arms, any arm. You want to carry a sword down the street, be my guest. You want to have a fully automatic Glock, an AR-15 over your shoulder, you want to drag a cannon behind, you want to drag a howitzer behind your truck. That's fine, because the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. An arm is defined as any weapon of offense or defense. Arms. But while Mr. Biden has been, he's been out in the forefront recently. Congress is passing laws. So we have the president basically attempting to bypass Congress to get what he wants, but Congress is doing its best to infringe on your rights as well. There are a couple of pieces of legislation that you should be aware of them, especially if you care about, rights, liberty, the Constitution, anything like that. The first is H.R. 8. It's referred to as the Bipartisan Background Checks Act of 2019. First of all, anything that's bipartisan basically means both sides are out to take something from you. And it's talking about background checks. This bill establishes new background check requirements for firearm transfers between private parties. One of the things that Mr. Biden said the other day when he announced his executive orders is that if you buy a firearm from a store, you go through a background check. If you buy one from a gun show, you don't have any back. You can pick it up. You don't have any background check. That is a lie, right? No sugarcoating. That is a lie. Now, I don't know if it's a lie because he's being fed misinformation or if he knows better and just doesn't care. He's going to tell you what he thinks will get you to do what he wants by hook or by crook. The law, right, the actual statutory law, makes no distinction about whether you are at a gun show or not. If you are buying a firearm from a dealer, you go through a background check. Trust me, I've been through many of them. If you are buying it from a private individual, You don't have to go through a background check. Now, that private individual might request some sort of background check, but you're not required. And I like the way they put it, between private parties, i.e. unlicensed individuals. Oh, so now the federal government wants you to go to them and beg permission to actually sell your firearm, to sell your property. That's not a right. If I have the right to keep and bear arms, if I have the right to do with my property what I want, I don't have to go to the government and beg permission. Understand, first of all, it is extremely rare that people who commit crimes with firearms actually purchase them through a legal manner. Right? Criminals don't go to the gun store and say, excuse me, I want to buy a gun. Yes, let me fill out my 4473, run a background check, and hopefully I'll pass so I can get my gun. It doesn't work that way. Right? That's foolish. So this isn't going to do anything about stopping illegal firearms. What this does is twofold. One, it makes everybody who owns a firearm and sells it or transfers it or lends it to somebody without getting government permission, it makes them a criminal. In other words, anybody who follows the supreme law of the land, this gives the government an excuse to throw you in jail. But it's even more insidious than that because, let's face it, how do you track firearm sales or transfers between private parties? If I purchase a gun and I give it to somebody, or if I give it to my daughter, or I give it to a relative, or I sell it to a friend, how does the government know that it happened? How does it know whether or not I went through a background check? The only way for them to know is either they find the firearm at the scene of some crime and realize that ownership has changed without their knowing, or they need a registry. Why do you think they want this law is a step towards a federal firearms registry? Now, why do they want a federal firearms registry? Well, the answer is simple. See, while not every firearms registry that's ever happened has led to a gun confiscation, every gun confiscation that has happened started with a registry. There is no reason for the federal government to know what you own unless they want the ability to come take it. This is merely an attempt for the federal government to further infringe on your right to keep and bear arms so that they can control it. Now, I love they go, this prohibition does not apply to certain firearm transfers, such as a gift between spouses in good faith. So now the federal government's going to decide how close a relationship has to be before it's not really a transfer. Okay, the Constitution says this is illegal. This is a violation. And again, I don't care what some court says. I'm not waiting for a court to tell me what the Constitution says. It's right there in black and white. You can go look it up for yourself. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. If you want your state to be free, you must have a militia, which is the armed populace. You must have people that are willing to stand up and defend it. Defend it against whom? Excellent question. Take a look at what President Biden has done. Take a look at what the Congress has done. You want to know who the state has to defend itself from? Yeah, it might have to defend itself from an external invasion, right? If you're in Texas or New Mexico, or maybe if you're in Montana or Michigan and the Canadians go crazy and decide to invade, you might have to defend yourself, and you want people able to defend yourself. But much more likely, you'll be defending yourself against the government in Washington. Why? Because they have gone beyond the consent of the governed. Therefore, the governed may have to stand up and say no. Well, it's a lot harder to say no if you have no way to defend. If you are powerless, if you are unarmed, if you are cowering before a politician or a law enforcement officer, you're not likely to stand up, are you? See, we've seen this in history before. We've seen this on this continent. We've seen this before, right here. And we're doing it again. We're setting ourselves up to stand powerless before a central government that is coming for your rights. And this is one step along that path. I don't care that it's bipartisan, because as far as I'm concerned, a bipartisan just means that I've got twice as many people trying to take away my rights. Bipartisan, smash partisan, I don't care. It's evil. It's wicked. It's a violation of the rule of law. It's a violation of their oath of office. Yet we keep hiring these fools. Maybe I'll come up with better terms for it. But we keep hiring these fools to represent us, to take our rights away from us. Now, the next is H.R. 1446, which is the Enhanced Background Check Act of 2021. And what they want to do is, again, they want to revise the background check system. Now, I want you to think about this for a second. I realize not everybody that listens to this has firearms. They may not be involved. They may not care. That's fine. I have no problem with that. But I want you to put yourself in someone else's shoes. Imagine you have a thought about something. You want to express yourself. You want to submit a letter to the editor. You want to put a comment on a website. You want to do a podcast. You want to post on Facebook or Twitter. Imagine having to go to the government and go through a background check before you're allowed to be on Twitter or Facebook. And before you think I'm nuts, look at the cancel culture. They'll ban anybody that disagrees with them. So now imagine you want to post something on Facebook. So you fill out your, modified 4473, and the government goes through and looks through your background to decide whether or not they think you should be allowed to post, to write, to express yourself, to exercise your freedom of speech or of the press. Imagine having to go through a background check before you're allowed to go to church, because we can't trust you to actually exercise your freedom of religion, your right to peaceably to exercise your religion without the government checking. Or better yet, let's imagine that you want to get a gathering. You're unhappy about something. You want to have a gathering. You want to peaceably assemble, and you want to petition your government for a redress of grievance. Imagine that you have to go through a background check first. Now, all of those are rights protected by the Constitution, but for some reason, this one, the right to protect yourself with firearm, with any arm, you have to go through a background check first. And look at what they want to do to make this. Now, because you have a right to keep and bear arms, when they created the background check system, they said, well, we'll make it the instant background check system, meaning we're not going to make you wait around. We'll do a quick check. You're guilty until proven innocent, right? You're assumed that you're prohibited until the government says, okay, and it's all right. So the first thing I want to do is... specifically, they want to increase the amount of time from 3 days to a minimum of 10 days for them to get an answer back. So you go to buy a firearm, you fill out a form, it's called a 4473, they punch it into the system, and the FBI, I'm pretty sure it's the FBI, they do a background check, and generally, right there, within a few minutes, they come back with either a yes or a no. Sometimes they come back with a maybe. Now, according to the law, they've got 3 days. The federal government has 3 days to make up its mind. After that, the seller can, doesn't have to, the seller at their discretion can sell you that firearm because, well, the government is infringing on your right to keep and bear arms. But now they want to add it to 10 days. So now the dealer has to wait 10 days, a minimum of 10 days for the background check to complete. And oh, by the way, they want to go farther. They actually want to say that after 10 days, they basically have to ask the government to put up or shut up, make up their mind. Is that not infringement on your right to keep and bear arms? They're saying if the background check isn't completed in 10 days, then you can beg the government to give you permission. That's not a citizen. That's a subject. That's a serf. That's someone who lives at the behest and the will of government. Is that what you want to be? They want to change the system because they don't believe you have a right to keep and bear arms. They believe that the government will allow you to keep and bear arms. And again, it's just another step on infringing on your rights to keep and bear arms, and by extension, your right to property. If you own this property, right, you have the right to property. That means you have the right to own it, you have the right to control it, and you have the right to dispose of it as you see fit. But they don't care. And they don't care because the American people don't make them care. The American people don't stand up and say, no, we've told you this is your limit. You, if you're not going to stay within that limit, no, you have no authority. The executive orders are illegal. H.R. 8, H.R. 1446 are illegal. They infringe on your right to keep and bear arms. They infringe on the Second Amendment. They infringe on the Fifth Amendment. Some of the executive orders infringe on the Fourth Amendment. They're illegal. And what do most people do? They go, tis, tis, oh, isn't that terrible? Or isn't that wonderful? Several people are talking about going to the courts. Oh, we'll go to the federal government to ask them to protect us from the federal government. No. No, it's about time the American people stop looking for someone else to protect them from themselves. We, the people of the United States, established this Constitution. We set the boundaries. We gave consent to this government and its limitations, and it's up to us to enforce that. Now, just as they said, just as Benjamin Franklin said in 1776, we need to say it today. We must all hang together, or we will all assuredly hang separately. That means if you're going to be a Lone Ranger, you're going to end up at best in jail. But if we hang together, if we join together and we protect each other's rights, including this nonsense, if we look at that and we say, listen, as Alexander Hamilton said, as Chief Justice Marshall said in Marbury versus Madison, you're doing an action that is contrary, it's repugnant to the Constitution, it is void, it is empty, it is meaningless, and all courts and all departments should ignore it. It's about time we, the people, first, we talk to our sheriff. We make sure our sheriff is going to protect us from these illegal orders. Right? That's your first step. Because if you can't trust your sheriff to cover your back, then nothing you do is really going to be that safe. So first, meet with your sheriff and make sure they have your back. They're going to enforce the Constitution, not illegal orders and illegal laws. Then we need to go to our state legislatures and we need to demand that they fulfill their oath to support the Constitution. That means standing up and saying, no, you cannot enforce illegal executive orders within the boundaries of our states. You cannot infringe on the Second Amendment inside the borders of our states. And if you try, we will arrest you. And if I'd love to see them add to the legislation, if a state agent, if a state law enforcement officer or their superiors refuses to do so, they need to be terminated. If an appointed officer refuses to cooperate in protecting the citizens of their state from an out-of-control federal government, they need to be fired. In fact, I'd love to see not only criminal charges against federal officers that try to enforce these laws, but against those who refuse to protect people from those laws. Let's stop protecting the people who promise to protect us and then fail miserably. They don't even try. I think it was back in 2013, Kansas passed I think they called it the Second Amendment Protection Act. And I remember Governor Brown back, and he stood up and he was like, this is important. We're protecting the Second Amendment. And anybody from ATF that comes in, tries to enforce, you know, the National Firearms Act will be arrested. If a firearm or accessory is manufactured in Kansas, sold in Kansas, and remains in Kansas, it's not under the National Firearms Act. is not subject to the National Firearms Act. And if any federal agent tries to enforce that, they'll be arrested. They'll be jailed. And as soon as ATF showed up, Brownback, the attorney general, I don't remember his name, the state of Kansas folded like a cheap suit. So I want to see some teeth put in that. I want to see if, okay, governor, if you don't enforce that law, you go to jail. Wouldn't that be interesting? To have a law that says, listen, you said you're going to do this. If you don't do that, there will be consequences. Maybe you're just fired. Maybe it's like automatic impeachment. Or maybe it's, you know what? You do jail time. That may be extreme, but I'm looking at the state of what's going on in this country, and I'm worried that we may need extreme one day. But we need to stop looking for someone else to protect us. We, the people, are the rightful owners of this Constitution. We are the rightful heirs to the sovereign power of this nation, and we need to start acting like it. We need to exercise our sovereign power directly, where we legally can. We start with our counties and our cities. We move to the state. And guess what? You get enough states that start standing up to the federal government and putting it back in its place, Washington will begin to get fixed. It'll get better. It's not going to be perfect, but it'll get better. Just imagine, what would Biden do if half the state said, sorry, Mr. Biden, those executive orders are meaningless. We're not doing anything. And in fact, we won't enforce these executive orders because they violate the Constitution. We swore an oath to support the Constitution. Oh, by the way, if you try to infringe on the rights of our citizens, any of your administration who comes and tries to do that will be arrested and tried for violating state law and for violating the Constitution, which, by the way, is a federal crime. Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't it be nice to have, your state go to the FBI and say, we need an investigation because this person violated federal law. Oh, yeah, what law? 18 U.S.C. 242. They deprived someone of a right protected by the Constitution under color of law. Really? Yeah, they tried to enforce an illegal executive order. Even if Washington doesn't get fixed, to live in a state and a county where your rights are protected will make such a difference in how we live our lives. So I hope you'll ponder that. I hope you'll think about that. And I hope when you see what's going on, you'll realize that we the people are not powerless. Also, I hope you'll find out more, not just about my show, but about all the latest podcasts and shows that you can find on America Out Loud. Just head to AmericaOutLoud.com, look under shows or under schedule, and you can find out more, and you can be in the know. And I'm looking forward to joining you next time right here on the Constitution Study.